sometimes I slept on the cold ground or under in a truck or abandoned buildings or whatever, not knowing that I was suffering from PTSD and I was just trying to run.
If you've ever been told you weren't good enough, not big enough, not fast enough, not smart enough, or if you've ever felt paralyzed by a failure you just weren't willing to accept, this is the show for you. Hustle and Motivate is a blueprint built by guests who've conquered obstacles, silenced critics, and overcome adversity by seeing every failure as an opportunity, realizing the true power of the underdog mentality. This is Tyler O'Shea, and you're listening to Hustle and Motivate. Welcome back to the show, guys. Thanks for all your support and your words of encouragement. I really appreciate your honest feedback, all your suggestions you've made to me of how to improve the show. So thanks for all that. Now, a lot of you guys are in your early to mid-20s, and I always hear a lot of uncertainty and stress around choosing a career path and getting your life together. I mean, I've felt it myself sometimes, that it's that internal pressure to have it all figured out. But if that sounds like you, I hope you got a chance to listen to last week's interview with Kevin Kaliber, the Hollywood actor and filmmaker. There's a guy who switched up his whole life at 30 years old and picked probably the riskiest career path you can pursue, and it all worked out for him. Now he's happier than he's ever been. It just goes to show you that it's never too late to make a change, and it's never too late to go after your dreams. Speaking of that, this week's guest fits that mold perfectly. Papa Joe DiMeo is a Vietnam veteran who's battled PTSD and addiction on the way to finally living out his dream as a musician. In our conversation, Joe talks about growing up in poverty, the struggles of returning home after the war, and how he finally rediscovered his love for music. He also tells a great story of the time he went on stage at a heavy metal concert, just him and his acoustic guitar, and had a crowd of metalheads practically eating out of the palm of his hand. So, let's get right into it. Here is Papa Joe DiMeo.
And we'll start from when I was born, because basically that's the first obstacle I overcame. I was born back in 1950, and preemie babies didn't always make it, and my parents were told that I would be one of those that wouldn't make it, but of course I proved that wrong. And then shortly after that, they told my parents I wouldn't be able to walk at all, and I proved that wrong. I actually became a speed skater, a roller speed skater, in my teen years, and won a couple of medals and trophies and stuff like that. So I proved everybody wrong from the get-go, and I grew up in a poor family, basically, to start off with. My mom was a single mom because I had my biological donor was an alcoholic artist. He was a great artist, and I guess he was also great at being an alcoholic. So it was pretty tough through my early years as well. Then once I got into my teen years, things were a little better. I had a stepfather who did his best to do, you know, his fatherly duties, but he came from that era where to do your fatherly duties just meant, you know, bring home that bacon and maybe a couple of steaks on the side, you know. The love was a different type of thing in those days. But, you know, I grew up feeling loved and having a good family life. It was just difficult because a lot of times they didn't understand me that I wanted to be a performer. I wanted to be a musician, an actor. And their response to that would be, no, be a lawyer, a doctor. And then, of course, my grandparents being from Italy, their thing was, go be a priest. You know, so I grew up having my dreams pretty much squashed at every turn. But I still participated in band, in chorus, theater classes and stuff like that throughout school. And then right after high school, I went to Vietnam because I was in that, what they had during the draft was called a lottery. And I got lucky. My number was number 3. So that meant that I would be the third batch of people being grabbed into the military and sent to Vietnam. So I thought I'd be smart and sign up and maybe be able to beat the war part. And my recruiter, being such a truthful person, he told me straight out, he says, look, you need to go to school, become an instructor of some sort, and that will keep you here stateside. So I signed up to go to school and then be an instructor. Well, I did very well. I graduated at the top of my class. I think I was 98 or 99% at the top, and was told I could be an instructor. And then a week later, I got my papers for my new destination. I was to be an instructor in Vietnam. So they got me anyway. Huh. And so then after Vietnam, when I got home, things just, I didn't fit in. I thought the world had just gone totally batshit, which now I pay attention, and it has. But, I thought it was the world and not me. I didn't realize that I had PTSD. And I went around for a few years like that. I was writing music, but not playing out anywhere, not associating with people. Crowds just threw me off. I couldn't do much. I had agoraphobia for quite a while, actually. Then something got under my skin, and I just had to go cross country. And so I hitchhiked cross country and stopped here and there, did odd jobs and whatever to support myself. Sometimes I slept on the cold ground or under in a truck or abandoned buildings or whatever, not knowing that I was suffering from PTSD, and I was just trying to run from it. Then I made it to California finally, and I ran into my wife of 40 years now, and she was reading an article, and she saw that I should go seek help, because this article was one of the very first articles on PTSD, and everything in it was me totally. So I started searching, out VA and stuff like that. And I battled them for over 20 years just to get my disability, because most of my records were either top secret or supposedly burned in a fire or lost or this or that for almost 20 years. And then all of a sudden, this big stack of records came out, and I finally got my disability. And then we moved back from California to New England, basically Rhode Island, where I grew up. And it just wasn't the same still. And I started going through therapy, and they tried all kinds of different drugs on me. I got addicted to a couple of them. I had my own addictions to alcohol and street drugs, because I was trying to self-medicate to get away from the guilt, the pain, the angry that I had inside of me. And then I started writing music again. Then I started playing again a little bit. I quit playing totally for almost 27 years.
Wow.
And then in 2008, my oldest son, who now is world-renowned metal guitarist for many different bands. Right now he's with a band called Dark Sky Choir, and they're getting ready to tour with Queensryche. Yeah. I had showed him a couple of chords when he was like 8 or 9 years old, and he got so good so fast that I put my guitar away and just quit, because the PTSD had my mind saying, what the hell are you doing even trying? Look at this kid, So I quit and, raised the family, fought with the PTSD for quite a while. I still do. You may hear it a little in my voice when I talk about this stuff. But overall, it's pretty much under control nowadays because of music, VA. We kind of taught each other. I was one of their first PTSD patients in Rhode Island, and actually help them build a PTSD clinic by being their guinea pig, so to speak. But back to the music. So then, after all those years of quitting, in 2008, I went out to visit my son when he had just gotten back from a European tour. And we stayed about a week or two. And the day we were getting ready to come back to the East Coast, he stopped into our hotel room with a Zoom 16-track recorder. And he says, "Hey, you know, Dad, I don't have any of your songs down. I brought a guitar. I brought my recorder. Could you record a few for me?" So I said, "Sure, you know." So I laid down my vocals and acoustic guitar. And then my wife and I had to go on a shopping trip for stuff for the trip home. By the time we got back a couple hours later, my son took and laid his guitar work over my stuff. Just sent me into tears and chills. Mm. And said to myself, "Screw this. I've got to get back into music." Well, we came home to the East Coast, and I picked up a Making Music magazine, a magazine out of New York, and they're always at the big NAMM festivals and stuff like that. And I read an article on doing some open mics. So I immediately said, "Okay, let's see if I can get my sea legs back and get out there and perform in front of people after having agoraphobia all this time. Let's see if you can actually get out." And I started going out, and it would be funny because I'd go out, I'd play, and I'd go home. I wouldn't even stick around because I couldn't stand the crowds.
Yeah.
Now that has changed some. It's like 11, 12 years later now. That's changed a lot. I now talk with my fans and, you know, interact with my fans, and it's pretty cool. But anyway, so I went and wrote back to Making Music magazine saying, "Hey, this is like a therapy for me because I'm actually getting more control over my PTSD by writing my music, getting out and playing it, this, that, and the other." Well, they sent me a t-shirt and some postcards so I could give to people so they could get free issues of Making Music magazine. So I passed them out and everything. And then about 10 years later, I get an email from the new editor of Making Music magazine. So he says, "Saw your letter. Let's do an interview." So we did an interview this past year, and they released it at the California NAMM show. And so thousands and thousands of people got to see this article, maybe even millions, I don't even know. And the article was Papa Joe DeMail, How He Found Music Again. And, you know, now I have the band, the Papa Joe Show. I'm acting in movies. I've got my music is being played worldwide on radio, both on national radio and internet radio stations. One of my songs was at top three for 45 weeks. So I'm having a ball. I'm finally living the dream I wanted to do as a teenager. And the one thing I got to say to myself is I'm glad I didn't get to do it then, because I would have been one of those statistics of sex, drugs, rock and roll died, mm-hmm. you know. But now that I'm older and I've gotten over my addictions, I've gotten over the fact that you don't have to have a lot of money to survive and enjoy life. You have to have friends, family, and support groups to more than anything else. So now, you know, I just tell people, no matter what your dream is, you got to keep going after it, because here I am almost 69 and I've got the best band of musicians around me. Helping me out. Matter of fact, tonight we actually start recording our CD Through Love and War, and hopefully it'll be out before Christmas.
That's awesome.
Now, I'll let you ask any questions, because I know this is only like a half-hour show, and I'm one of those people, if you give me a stage, you got to get the hook to pull me off.
No, it's funny you mentioned that magazine article, because I read in there, I actually found it online, and you wrote that you're a singer with COPD, a guitar player with arthritis in your hands. How do you deal with all that and still perform on a regular basis?
A lot of times, it's very hard. Before every performance, I have to hit my inhaler. And if I'm doing like a full night at a club, I usually do my inhaler between each set. I have special gels that I rub on my hands and fingers. I also have to go in every 3 to 5 months for shots in my joints, in my fingers. And I have to do hot paraffin baths almost every other day for both hands. And then I just now had to get shots in my neck and right shoulder, because it was causing such a, I have a couple of vertebrae out in my neck as well as in my lower back, and it was pushing on the nerves so much that I was getting a constant headache in the back of my head, to the point of where I couldn't sleep and I was in tears. And but I do whatever it takes, because to me, I'm the most happy when I see smiling faces having a good time in front of me.
Yeah. And you went from, you know, completely quitting music to now, like you just said, nothing's going to stop you. How did that shift happen? Was it that night with your son?
Pretty much, yes. My son recording, because he is such a phenomenal guitarist, his guitar playing over my songs just jerked the emotions out of me. And then the Making Music magazine article about the open mics was just like the topper. It was like, oh, all right, somebody's telling you, get your ass out there. And so through the grace of God, my son, Making Music magazine, and great bandmates that I have, we're going, and we're not going to stop until we're playing casinos across the U.S.
Wow. And what do you love most about music?
Actually, I love the fact that it really is the universal language. No matter what you do, music can win over people. I took an acoustic guitar and just myself, thanks to my son also, to a heavy metal festival, and just before the headliners went on, my son introduced me and my acoustic guitar and said, he's going to do a song that he wrote about Vietnam. Need I say more? And when I hit the first three notes of this song, or first three chords, which are very slow and crazy, you can see on the audience's face, they were like, oh shit, what are we in for? This, how do we react? But as soon as I started into the main part of the song, an entire metal crowd was behind me 100%. I actually have that video on my page on Facebook, which I'll have to share it to you on your email.
Yeah, definitely send that over. Before we wrap this up, what's your biggest piece of advice? You touched on it earlier, but what's your biggest piece of advice for people pursuing their dreams?
Don't take your first disappointment and say, I give up. Don't even take your 1,000th disappointment and say, I give up. Just look at it as, it's not how many times you failed. It's actually how many times you saw the wrong way and you're going to find the right way. Don't ever give up. That's all I can say.
It's amazing. Kind of reminds me of the Rocky speech.
Yeah, well, you know, he got it for me.
Yeah, he definitely did. So before we say goodbye, do you want to tell people where they can find you and how they can support what you got going on?
Sure. They can go on Facebook and look for The Papa Joe Show, or Joseph V. DeMaio, D-E, capital M-A-I-O. That's my main page. You can't friend me there because I'm filled up according to Facebook, but you can go there or Fans of the Papa Joe Show or Papa Joe DeMaio, singer, songwriter, actor, speaker.
Awesome. And I'm going to link to all that in the show notes for this episode. And yeah, Joe, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, thank you. Anytime. And if you ever need me for some more stuff, I've got a lot of other things I've done too. So I appreciate you letting me be there amongst your many podcasts. And I hope everybody enjoyed it.
Thank you, man. And definitely send over that video. That sounds awesome at the metal concert.
Oh, yeah. I'll send that over to you by tomorrow morning.
Awesome. All right. Well, Joe, have a great night, man. I appreciate it.
You too. Thank you very much, Tyler.
If this conversation added any value to your life or taught you something new or helped you think about things a little bit differently, you don't have to subscribe. You don't have to leave a review. All I ask is that you just tell one friend. We don't care about the numbers, we don't care about the stats and all that stuff. What we do care about is impacting lives. And by telling someone about the show, you're helping us do that. So thanks for tuning in, and remember, Hustle and Motivate is brought to you by JokerMag.com, the home of the underdog.